This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
To declare your independence on the Free Talk Live Network.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Me, Ernest Hancock. We're continuing our conversation in the second hour with Larkin Rose, author of The Most Dangerous Superstition. Goodman. And he also did a short story that has been made into a full-length movie. This is a feature movie. It's very, very, very nice. Well done. Called The Jones Plantation. Give it a listen. This is interesting and a good tool for you to use.
And in the movie, you get the behind-the-scenes thing of what Smith and Jones and then Mr. Johnson later on, what they're talking about, because they describe, because Jones kind of takes a while to figure out what's going on. He's like, why did we do this? And Smith has to keep explaining to him, because if you do that, you know, here's how a human being reacts. And if you do it this way, they know that they're being oppressed and abused, and so they run away or they rise up or they do something nasty to you. But if you do it this way and you frame it this way, and one of the things early on that Smith points out is that, like, almost all he's doing is just changing their perceptions by saying words, and that's all. Like, nothing else changed. And he has to explain that even to Mr. Jones, because he's used to the old school version of slavery, where it's just, I'm going to hurt you if you don't go and pick my cotton for me.
And you played one of the overseers, man. You're that, and they kept, oh, this is awesome. They kept Larkin, shut up! He didn't have any speaking parts. I don't know, did you even say a word in the whole thing?
No, my job was just to glare at people. I was an Irish indentured servant in the background, and all I did was give people dirty looks the whole time. But that was fun.
Yeah, no. That was, you know, one thing you were talking about during the process of filming, you know, you would have rewrites, or you got to do the next day's script, and you got to, I mean, there was a lot of work. How long were you actually on location?
The shoot was only 2.5 weeks for the whole thing. First, we shot the interiors at one huge plantation house, and then we had the same sort of headquarters the whole time. But for the exteriors, it's like a half hour drive to drive across the river, and at a different place that was an actual slave plantation before, in Faraday, and. Yeah, I always have to think. It's Natchez, Mississippi, and Faraday, Louisiana. I wouldn't entirely say God was smiling on us during the outdoor shoots, because it was Mississippi, and it was like 20 degrees and drizzling the whole time. So, which you can't tell from watching the thing, but yeah, it was a little painful. But yeah, to do the entire shoot, so not only did we do the entire shoot in 2.5 weeks, The cast and crew had never met before they showed up on set. That I'd never met most of the actors. Andrew found them by way of, he has connections.
Well, were they SAG, you know, union non-strike actors?
Well, that's the funny thing is, because early on, the Screen Actors Guild had just dropped their long list of stupid, like, COVID restrictions. You have to do this, everybody has to wear a mask, blah, 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 and get tested every 5 seconds. And they're like, okay, we don't need to do that. And we were setting up and casting the thing, and they're like, nope, we're bringing that all back. And we, like, first of all, on principle, but also just for practical reasons, we said, well, we're not doing union. Because we can't have one false positive test crash the whole thing. We don't have $100 million to like try again later. If it doesn't work that time, right then, right there, there is no movie. So we said, well, screw SAG, screw the union. And we told people like, cause I think some of the actors are SAG members. And we said, like, we're not doing union. You can keep doing it. And I'm not even sure which people we had to replace and change out, because that was all Andrew doing the casting with the connections he had, like especially in Atlanta area and stuff. But we found a bunch of people who would do it anyway. But yeah, they forced us to say we're not doing union, because we can't nearly afford to risk that if there's one dumb little whiff of something. Oh, this person sneezed wrong. That's the end of the movie. All the money's gone. We can't do anything ever again. Because there were so many little miracles that happened. Like, we didn't shoot the whole thing in chronological order, but the last scene was shot on the last day, and the sun was going down. And the actors had their plane tickets to fly home the next morning. So it's like, well, if we're going to have a movie, we have to shoot it right stinking now. And the sun's going down right stinking now. And so there were a lot of just frantic rushes to make things work and changing things on the fly and doing scene rewrites like every night because things come up and that's not going to fit and we have to shorten this and we have to chuck that entirely, which means we have to rewrite this and this and this because they all refer to the thing that doesn't happen anymore. And so I love the fact that just watching the movie, there's no indication of all the things that had to change and had to be cut or moved or altered. And some of the, it's weird how this works. Some of my favorite parts were the result of like last minute panics. Like one of my favorite scenes is in the old 150-year-old church or however old that thing is Mr. Jones coming in to give a talk of like somebody was stealing around here. That scene, the guy who plays Mr. Jones and I, we wrote that on the drive over from Natchez, Mississippi, and he just delivered it flawlessly, like 3 times in a row. The scene didn't exist. We had to. He wasn't even going to do that part. Part of the message that was supposed to be was in a talk that Mr. Smith is supposed to be explaining to the workers, but we're like juggling things around and stuff, and we're like, no, we can have a way to make this be Mr. Jones's job to explain this part, but only if we do it this way. And so we went back and forth. So yeah, that scene didn't really exist until we made it to the set that morning. And I love it. And his delivery of that is perfect. And
Let's talk about the actors and the crew and so on. To do something like this, you had probably, I mean, on screen actors and actresses had to be, I don't know, almost 20 or something. I mean, what was the number, you think?
Yeah, I think that's about right. I don't even know the exact number, but yeah, it's about 20. And if we had a huge budget, we could have had more slaves.
It was enough.
Workers.
It was enough. It did its thing. It was a small plantation thing. I'm sure there were many like that. Now, the actual, let me just ask a bunch of questions. The actual location, you know, the plantation that primarily, was that a real plantation, a museum, or somebody's house or something? What was that?
Both of them were. The indoor, the huge mansion that you see is in Natchez, Mississippi. Oh, the funny thing is, I think they closed that for tours like 3 months after we shot. So we only just barely, we were like the last thing able to shoot there. But that was a place open to like tours and you could visit it and stuff.
And it closed just, permanently?
To the public, yeah.
Oh, so somebody bought it and it's their house now or something.
Yeah, and I don't know what they're trying to do. Maybe they're opening a slave plantation. I don't know. But, yeah, so we just barely got that. And then the other one, Frogmore in Faraday, Louisiana, was the outdoor shoots. And there, we didn't really have an inside. There was a room we could be in with a heater that barely worked and a door that didn't really close. So, like, our nice, warm, comfortable place to hang out between shooting was, like, 50 degrees maybe and crowded like a sardine can. And then everything else is the external, the big church where a lot of it is shot that has the podium. Originally, again, it's another thing that had to change. That was going to be shot on the front porch of the house. A lot of the meetings where Smith is talking to the workers, and that changed to the church because that's was easier to control the lighting and the sound and stuff inside, but that you could see through the walls of that church. So even though there was a heater in there, theoretically it wasn't doing any good because the wind would just...
Okay, now that church was on the location that was in Louisiana or Mississippi?
That's the Louisiana one, and that church was on the grounds of that slave plantation.
This is, you know, who did the site selection? Is that like one of the initials they have, the CSA, you know, casting whatever professional Hollywood people? I mean, who did this?
That's what happens if you have money. Since we didn't, that's one of 8 million things that Andrew had to do himself. He went down south and he scouted a number of locations, and some were like, well, this place is really cool, but there's nowhere to shoot that stuff. So, and we were hoping to get one spot where we could do interiors and exteriors. But what he came up with was pretty dang cool, which was they're only a half hour apart, even though it's across the river, one Mississippi and one Louisiana. But he went and found them and was like, well, this would be perfect for the interiors. We like the fact that the big plantation house is kind of run down because that fits the plot of the movie of, like, the plantation is failing and they're losing money and stuff. So the shutters on the windows are slightly falling apart. And so he really liked that look because if it's like a pristine plantation, it doesn't look like you're failing. And then you get the transitions back and forth to the church, which is, even though we were shooting inside, that counted as part of the outdoor shoots because it was like 20 degrees inside the church. So that's one of the things where we're shooting on one side of the church and you have, you know, Mr. Smith and or Mr. Jones or whatever up on the front. There's a big pile of like winter coats just out of view. So everybody's getting ready and learning their lines, like, okay, ready, go. And everybody piles their coats and runs over.
So what time of year was this?
It was winter, but even winter in Mississippi isn't usually 20 degrees. I actually forget the exact dates of when we were there.
Yeah, global warming. All right, so the you have the actors all selected. And where did he get them from? How did he's got headshots of non-union found you at Dairy Queen. I mean, how did these people get selected?
I don't even know. You'd have to ask him. He has connections, especially around Atlanta, like I said, to you know, the industry there. And he had a bunch of like video interviews of different people. There was a different guy who's going to be Mr. Smith. And we were both like, that's pretty good. And then we saw the video of Maurice Johnson, who plays Mr. Smith, and we're like, oh, that's perfect. That's the...
He looks familiar. Has he been in things I might have seen?
He hasn't been in anything huge, but he's been in a number of things. I don't remember offhand what they were and whether I've seen them before or not.
All right, this is the one thing, just as an aside. When Atlas Shrugged came out, the first one, they had like, they... jerking around with the dates and how long they had for their rights to make the film expired, and originally it was supposed to be Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. That was going to be a big thing, and then that never came, and they don't want Atlas Shrugged made. That was obvious. So then the Atlas Society and friends and people and whatever kind of like your film. All right, we got so many millions, and we're going to do it right now. And they did it in like a month. I mean, it was amazing. A lot of people, they didn't like it. I liked it. The first one, the second, third one. The second Dagny looked like the first one's mom or something. But, it was the first one I thought was awesome. It got the flavor of it right. It was, there's a lot of things that were in. Of course, they want more and whatever. But the first one of the trilogy, loved it. Especially for how much money it didn't cost. And I thought it was, wow, this was amazing. But any and all of the actors that were in that did a great job, oh, hell no. You're never going to work again. You did some Freedom Ayn Rand Atlas Shrugged thing. You can't, man, and especially, the agent better be telling you, if you go in for the second and third installment, man, we're going to kill you. I mean, or something. They did not like the fact that I'm wondering if the same thing happened with your film. You know, you got the lead actor, you know, the black actor that played, the enslaver guy, you know, the Jones Plantation. Was his name? No, he was Smith, right?
Yeah,
you know,
Smith.
So the alias Smith and Jones. Anyway, so you had Smith, you know, being the guy that comes in, I'm going to fix your plantation for you, the Jones Plantation, and you guys are part owners, you're stakeholders, and all this other BS. You know, I can see what was going to happen. So they get conned into, you know, supporting the government, and we got those that don't go with it, we got to whip them, and it was amazing, the parallels of what's going on, which is the reason why you did it. So that actor... Is he first in line for some Hollywood production, is he? Huh? Is he? You know? You see my point?
Yeah, but I don't think it'll be a similar thing because it doesn't... Because the movie tells a fictional story about what is and the, like, demented mindset of psychopaths and how they actually control people. It doesn't even say what should be. So, while I'm sure people will find reasons to complain about it, like, if it gets big enough that, like, the mainstream critics are going to say anything, I'm sure there's going to be people throwing money at them to find something bad to say about it, whatever. But it isn't, like, Ayn Rand has the Ayn Rand message in it. And the message of this isn't even, like, here's how things should be. It just shows here's how things definitely should not be, but are. And so I don't think, and that's one of the reasons why when Andrew came up with the idea, I thought this is by far the best video I've ever made to make into a movie because it sort of flies under the radar. And we've seen that too by the responses we get from normal people who some of them are sort of troubled and a lot of them are like, that was really thought provoking. And, but like, what is there to be offended by unless you're literally like a slave plantation owner, in which case I'm okay with offending you because you're an evil psycho. But anybody else, like the most they could do is say, well, I don't really think that's what we have now. Okay, well, it didn't really say it was, and you're allowed to think it isn't because it isn't really saying, like it doesn't explain voluntarism or anything like that. I think it's such a impactful yet non-offensive way to do it, because like what would somebody's complaint even be about the movie? Like, you made slave owners look bad. It's like, okay, yeah, didn't really need us to do that. But I love the fact that it doesn't have to be preachy at all about what should be. It doesn't even say a word about what should be. Except Samuel, like the one guy there who figures out something's horribly wrong here, and he explains a little bit about what's wrong, but he doesn't explain, no, I'm going to describe the utopia of mankind. It never gets to that. So it would be really funny to watch somebody try to find some philosophical thing to complain about, because other than saying, well, I don't think it's really that bad, okay, you're allowed to think it isn't really that bad today. So... Like, so I'm waiting to see what people try to be offended by, because I can't even imagine what it would be.
This has been an experience that we went through at Anarchapoco. It was shown there. And was that the first screening at Anarchapoco?
Yeah, and that wasn't even quite finished. There were a number of things that weren't quite finished in that version of it, but that's the first time it was sort of a test showing of what we had at the moment. I mean, it was the main thing. It was, you know, most of it, but there were a few little.
Yeah, no, you went all whining about, oh, it's not color corrected of the anal, you know, yeah. The title. I don't care. Anyway, so it looked awesome then. And then I think I saw it. You know, I might have been one of the guys that bought it online just because. But, you know, we watched that. And I'd like to have copies. I'm going to, you know, buy from you or pirate if you're too slow. And then, you know, go ahead and have everybody see it. And that's one thing. When people like it, you better have something to share. They're just freaking going to, you know, we're libertarians, man. We'll just copy it. Better get on it, you know. Yeah, so, damn. But the... go ahead.
With our team and funding of almost nobody and almost nothing, going as fast as we can to get the DVD.
I am surprised at how inexpensively, quickly, and quality it came out. And it was so... And do you think you standing there, literally, on camera, being all stoic Larkin, you know, standing there, kept it on track, or Andrew would have done it without you?
Oh, he was the director. He didn't need me for any of that, because that's, you know.
No, I mean the philosophical thing. I mean, he embraced it. Yeah.
No, he already understood. I never would have started if he didn't. Like, if I wasn't sure, you know, even at those very early meetings at Random Warehouse in Phoenix, that he all the way understood the point of the movie, I could, like, completely disappeared at that point. And it's, I mean, there's little things I nitpicked about that I'm glad I did because I think it's a little bit better. But if I had just completely vanished after the rough draft, it would have been awesome anyway. And so I didn't, there's only one time I yelled at him on set because, like, at the last second I found out that, like, a really crucial plot point is, like, we're not doing that. And, again, I'm really glad that he chose that. It has to do with, it doesn't count as a spoiler because it's not in the movie. It's in the novel, but, cause Mr. Jones, that's one of the few people in the cast who actually was already like voluntarist pro freedom guy. He has a podcast. Lee Dolman, does the Quash, which is awesome. We'd never met, but he knew of me and then we met and, you know, obviously we're on the same page to begin with, but that character, before we were on the set, we didn't realize what he was going to bring to that character. And he's such a memorable, lovable, hateable scumbag.
The plantation owner
guy. Yeah, in the original script, he does something, like, pretty damn bad. And Samuel catches him in the act, and then there's a scuffle and a fight and stuff. And it was going in the direction pretty dang dark, as you can probably guess, and that got thrown out, like, the day before we were supposed to shoot it, and it should have been, because there's a level where you're okay with laughing at a bad guy like Jones, who's, like, he owns people, he thinks that's okay, but there's still, it's okay to laugh at him, but there's a certain level of dark that if you go beyond that, we're not laughing anymore, we want to see you hurled into the nearest wood chipper.
Yeah, it was like, taking advantage of one of the young girls or something.
Yes.
You know, because yeah. I remember there was like, I think it was kind of, you know, he's kind of did the Biden hair sniffing thing or something, you know, that. Yeah. That
we
was.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was okay, I get it. That was good enough, you know.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA News Update. The U.S. currently does not support a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas.
We believe that a ceasefire right now benefits Hamas, and Hamas is the only one that would gain.
National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby on Monday said the U.S. officials are collaborating with their Israeli counterparts to reduce civilian casualties in Gaza. The FDA is cautioning against the use of over-the-counter eye drop products from prominent brands like CVS Health, Rite Aid, Target, Up and Up, Velocity Pharma, Leader, and Rugby. The agency has identified a potential risk of eye infections that could lead to vision loss or blindness. This warning comes after investigators discovered unsanitary conditions and positive bacterial test results in critical drug production areas of the manufacturing facility. I'm Dave Collins, USA News.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and people just like you that need affordable health insurance to get it. We have short and long-term health insurance plans, and some even cover dental, vision, and prescription drugs. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or now need affordable health insurance, call right now and learn for free how to get it. Listen, affordable health insurance plans for everyone just like you are a free phone call away. So give us a shout right now.
800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. That's 800-670-0946.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
This hour, Declare Your Independence on the Free Talk Live Network is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is a cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Let's talk about your positive experiences using Dash. Dash has transaction fees that are less than 1 cent. Dash transactions are instant, irreversible, and are protected from 51% attacks by its chain locks technology. Dash is the world's first decentralized autonomous organization. BitRefill allows for discounted purchases at national retailers. We want to thank Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock on Free Talk Live Network on Genesis. We're continuing our conversation with Larkin Rose and the recently released movie, The Jones Plantation, educating us. Now we're all slaves. Because this is something that you don't have to have this gratuitous whatever. I mean, sometimes, you know, but this is something that you could show to your preteen kids. This is actual, you know, history on many levels. You know, this is, you know, something that's very interesting. So I'm looking at, I'll take care of baby, don't worry about it. So the one thing that I wanted to make sure that people understood is how philosophically eye-opening
and paralleling of what we're living in, where you think we get the 14th Amendment, and yeah, we got an amendment, you're free now, and all they did was enslave all of us. You know, we're on a plantation with all the trappings of, and what they did is demonstrate in the movie how that happened psychologically. How prepared you for it. And that was one thing, because your previous books, Iron Web and The Most Dangerous Superstition Government, you know, how did that happen? Well, this is how. You know, that's what you did. You had to get that out, you know, from all your experiences and your candles in the dark presentations and talking to people and, you know, the little dot, you know, videos that you've done and your mirror project, all this stuff that you've done has been just to really encapsulate how it happened psychologically in this one film. How many minutes is it?
I think the movie is like 110, and it feels short to me. And I've asked people, and they said it would feel like it was over an hour and a half to me. So, I mean, maybe it will to some people. But yeah, we hacked it down to that. And this movie does something I've never seen before. Actually, does a number of things I've never seen before. Like, plenty of movies have villains in them, but they never match how villains actually happen in the real world. Like, if you, and I, you know, I've pointed this out a million times in other talks and stuff. If you look at the rise to power of the worst murderers in the history of the world, Mao and Stalin and Hitler.
Yeah, it was getting voted. Yeah, we want that guy. Woo-hoo.
Yeah. They were voted into power to, like, excited, happy cheers of adoring throngs. And most people have no stinking idea how that happens, because most of the villains in Hollywood are these, like, obviously evil, I'm evil and doing evil things.
Klaus Schwab guys.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, only Klaus Schwab is dumb enough to actually, like, act that out.
I know, it's amazing.
What? But you don't get the real version of how evil comes to power, and in this you actually get it, where you get the kind of traumatic reality that the thing that powers evil in the real world is well-intentioned people who get deceived. It isn't the bad people. Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia and Red China, the evil things that happened there weren't because the bad people got together to do bad things. It was because a tiny number of bad people got together and knew how to trick the good people into empowering them. And that's what
America.
This movie shows in a way that I've never seen anything else do before. And that's why one of the things I want people to, a lot of viewers to feel, is unsure that they would have been on the right side. Because in the average right. movie, it's easy for somebody to go, I would have been rooting for the underdog, and yay, we win. I want people to realize that if they were there and hearing what Smith was saying, they probably would have fallen for it, and they probably would have resented anybody saying, this is wrong, he's not really here to help us. Because that's all of human history, is well-intentioned, duped people cheering absolute sociopaths into unlimited power.
Is there a happy ending at the end? Is there everybody understands and knows? Is there a happy ending? Did you give us a happy ending, Norkin?
Well, it's funny because the novel has more of a happy ending. There's only a tiny hint of the happy ending in the movie version, but you get the full story in the novel of that. But very early on, I told Andrew, and he immediately agreed at the time, it has to have a similar ending to the animated one where it isn't, and they all lived happily ever after, because I want people left with the feeling of, oh, crap, we're still there. It wasn't resolved. It wasn't fixed. They weren't freed. We're still there, and I, the viewer, am probably part of the reason we're still there. And so it had to have that sort of traumatic ending. But we did, that was one of the subplots that had to be cut down, and is what happens to Sarah afterwards, which is Samuel's little sister. In the novel, she actually gets free, and she goes up north.
You know, that's another thing. Let's talk about that. As you're doing the movie, you were writing the novel, right?
Yeah. Because in the middle of that and watching scenes, I was
like, oh, you cut that bastard! I'm going to put it in a novel!
Exactly. And the thing is, that was therapeutic, and it was also exactly what should happen, because what he cut out of the movie should have been cut out of the movie. It's not that he did it wrong. It's that I'm used to writing books, and I don't like plots disappearing that I was attached to. So I'm like, well, they won't die. They'll just be in this book over here, because you can fit a whole lot more into a book than you can fit into a movie. So all the things that weren't fun at the time, I'm glad he did, because they made the movie better as a movie. And I'm glad I made the book, because in a book, there's a lot more you can do. You can fit a lot more stuff in. So the subplot of what happens to Sarah afterwards, that's in there. And little things like, in the case of Jones basically attempting assault on a kid that's in the novel and was going to be in the movie, but we're like, no, the Jones character is too, the character that Lee Gullman made is sort of too lovably hateable. We don't want it to go that dark. But one of the things after that is Smith totally knows about it, and then he has leverage over Jones. And that's, you know, that's real world stuff, is they have dirt on all the people who get anywhere near any real power, so that if they step out of line, it's like, you know, we can destroy you, like, tomorrow. So even if somebody sort of acquires a conscience at some point, they don't nearly dare. You know, that's why the Epstein thing exists at all.
Right.
So that the ones who really pull the strings have dirt on absolutely everybody who gets anywhere near power. And so that was going to be in there, but it's like, it would be too much to fit that in and too much to explain it. And then we didn't want to ruin the Jones character.
Okay. Let me ask a bunch of other questions. I want to, you know, sure. How long from the time that you wrapped production that it was a film that the actors could see?
I believe Andrew also edited it, because we didn't have money, so he basically hid in his apartment for 8 months and edited the whole thing. And we had some people do some of the VFX. I even did some of that where there's like cars in the background that I had to digitally remove frame by frame. Because I happen to know how to do that. But yeah, I believe the original rough edit was 8 months out, but even then it wasn't. Like, Amanda and I went, because we only live like 20-some minutes away from him, went over there to see that. And at the time, up to
so he
then,
lives he in Arizona.
Yeah, he's in Phoenix.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so, which is kind of, it's sort of funny that we met in Mexico.
We should be making a bunch of movies. You know, that was one thing, you know, that he talked about. What genre is this? What kind of movie is it? What categorization does this have?
Yeah, I don't even know. Like, because it isn't just a period piece, and the feel isn't like that, and there's a lot of things about it that are sort of, like, cult classic-y weird that I think makes it feel way more modern, even though the story and the props and stuff, most of them are totally historically accurate. But it's sort of its own thing. Like, I don't know how to characterize it exactly, and I sort of like that about it.
Well, I'd like to be able to describe it. Somebody came up with some definitions. I was hoping you'd remember. I can't remember. It was like, I don't know, freedom drama, slap you upside the head, make you think about something. I have no idea.
Yeah, well, Andrew refers to it as the what's it called? The vanguard of the American dissident cinema movement.
Boom!
Because
good enough. They all sound like that.
Yeah. So I like that. That fits.
Okay, so it took a long time.
Yeah, he had it himself.
8 months.
For like 8 months, and then we saw the rough version. But it was still many more months until it was all the way finished with all the color and the sound.
Did you get response from the actors and actresses, them coming out, you know, commenting at all? Did they have anything to say? Are they proud? Are they putting it up on their resume or not?
Yeah, there's a number of them that are out there promoting it on their own and stuff, and having little screenings. The guy who plays Charles, one of the slaves, who Keith is the actor who plays that, had to like apologize to him for all the stuff he has to go through, because that character has like the worst time imaginable in every way possible. And he did an awesome job.
The heavy guy.
And so he had a little screening down in Arkansas.
The heavier guy, the bigger guy that was kind of opposition to what was going on, that guy?
Only a little bit. He's the one who got caught stealing Jones plantation credits, and then his daughter dies. And so a whole bunch of really horrible things happened to him all in a row.
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of stuff. You know, like little false flag stuff. You know, there was, you know, control, psychological. You put it all in there. You know, it was. I think it was crafted very well. I think it's definitely an anarchist, libertarian, cult, classic kind of thing. You know, I could see where it's a cult film, not because, you know, you need cults, but it was just, it's so representative of nuanced Larkin Rose fan people, you know, anti-government thing. But it's done in a way, this is something that I remember seeing a lot of this kind of flavor in elementary school. It was when they'd have some kind of a short, you know, that was kind of, you know, 1984-ish, you know. It was Brave New World-ish kind of deal. Yeah, what are those in? What are those genres? 1984 and Brave New World, what would they? And I just found out there was a Brave New World done in 98 that was on, I think, NBC or ABC or something. And one of the head characters was Leonard Nimoy, you know, Spock. And I'm going, where the hell did this come from? I have never seen this movie, and it was awesome. That was Brave New World, redone 1998 with Leonard Nimoy. I went and looked it up, and what did I find? You can't find it. The IMDb has it there. You can get it here. And to order the DVD was $130.
Yeah.
I'm like, are you kidding me? Well, you can get it used for 60. I mean, you know. So I'm just like, wow, they did not want this thing shown. When you watch it, you can see why. That's exactly what's going to happen to Jones Plantation. It was the same kind of thing, you know. And I'm just, you know, 1984. So what would that in 1984 be? You know, that's the classification you would wind up in.
Well, so often the categorization of movies is just sort of like drama or suspense or blah, 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 because there's no point to any of it. It's just kind of entertainment. Movies with a point, I'm not sure they even fit into a genre. Movies with a point.
Right.
Maybe that's its own.
Movies with a point.
That's its own genre.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Have you got any reviews? Is there, you know, like a, you know, Rotten Tomatoes give a crap? Or are they, you know, any of that stuff? Are you gone main anywhere?
Not any like professional reviewers yet. There's a bunch of reviews on IMDb. It's funny because somebody intentionally like sabotage bombed us there because the ratings were really high, and then we got like 29 1-star reviews in a row in the span of like a couple days.
Of course you
and
did.
There were no written reviews. It was just suddenly this barrage of we all hate it.
From where? Like, what platform was that on?
IMDb.
Of course.
Because it's listed there now.
Of course, of course, of course, of course.
And so there's a number of, like, viewer reviews there that are really cool that describe what they think of the movie. But then the actual star rating that we was doing really well, and then they, you know, there was just this obvious orchestrated attack. And, like, people are allowed to not like whatever they
want
to not like.
Yeah, no, I'm wondering who would be negative.
It goes like that.
I know, but why? I mean, it could have been bots. It's a government, you know, CIA operation of whatever the hell, because they can't.
Yeah, and the thing is, I have a collection of haters and stuff who, like, downvote everything I do on YouTube, and it's, like, whether
bots.
It's government bots or just bitter twits.
Bots.
I don't know.
Bots, AI bots. You know, this is, you know, the people that, you know, do this kind of stuff as a mission are paid. They're trolls. They're government. I've been doing this for a long time. Man, it's just automated. You're not allowed to whatever the heck. So I'm just, you know, this is definitely in that category. Now, the guy that played the plantation owner, is he the one with the podcast you're talking about?
Yeah, he has a podcast called The Quash.
He did everybody did such a good job. You know, who I really want to compliment was... Who picked the cast? Was that Andrew did that, the director?
Yeah, that was Andrew. Yeah.
Score, man.
And he asked me about a couple things, like Smith, and when I saw Maurice, I was like, yeah, that's the look. that Smith, but almost all the other ones, I didn't know anything about him, and he chose them because he's the director and that's his job. But yeah, the guy who plays Mr. Jones is awesome. He's not an actor. I mean, he is, but he wasn't before, and yeah. You know, he never had. But his delivery, he was just so hysterical, unbelievable. The funny thing is, when he breaks the fourth wall at the end, he almost doesn't have to act because he's explaining things that he actually understands and explains on a regular basis. It's just the difference between explaining it and going, there, I benefit from this, or explaining it and going, that's why it's horribly evil. But the explanation is the same. I'm just describing how this stuff works. It's just whether he's happy about it or...
Okay, the future of this. This is. Does this have, you know, it's going to be cult, and all of a sudden it's Rocky Horror Picture Show? Or is it going to be kind of get a big bump? Is there some support? Is it just, you'll see what happens? Because as we get more and more into Jones Plantation, it's obvious here naturally, I can see this is not going to get... you know, less of a viewing. I mean, it's going to continue to grow, but is there, like you say, with the bots or the whatever, the negative reviews on it, which is, there is no way this gets a negative review. I mean, how positive, but definitely a positive. You know, it's just, and the fact that it was done quickly and with the budget that you did from a, you know, a small short story and kind of, man, you know, so who gets the props? One, you've been advocating this forever, but it's definitely an Andrew thing. I mean, you know, that somebody took and did it and was able to make it happen and then corral everybody into getting this done. And then the actors, well, that comes into a selection process by him, too. All of them. All of the actors played the slaves, you know, the children, you know, the different main characters that were involved, you know, even the overseer. Then you just kind of being, you know, sight decoration or whatever. You know, what I was impressed with, there's Larkin. Well, we got to hear it. Not a freaking word. I was like, awesome, you know? And so this was so... I'm hoping that these actresses, actors, you know, especially the Smith guy, the other guys, that they get work from this, but I'm thinking that they will punish them. You ain't never make it in nothing. But they're out of Atlanta, which has its own movie thing.
Yeah. At this point, I'm not sure they're even... I'm not sure that whole punishment thing would exactly apply the same way. Because, like I said, it isn't even preaching a particular solution. It's just showing the problem. And at this point, like, there's a number of... I think a few of... I'm not even sure which ones, but I think a few of them were... SAG and probably still are, because most actors are, and they're just like, well, I'm going to do it anyway, because it's that or not have any work. Like, if those are my choices, why would I choose zero work? But I think it's sort of, I think we're getting beyond the point, because mainstream Hollywood is sort of falling apart, and then you start to have these little projects that, what was the... what's her name? I'm going to get her name wrong. That, like, Disney banned her because of some, like, not at all offensive...
Gina Carano!
Yeah, that's right.
Carano or something like that, you know?
Yeah, something like that. You know what I mean?
Disney, and then ESPN, Hulu was free because we had some Verizon package or something. They did that. I'm done. I unsubscribed from Disney, all their crap, because kiss my butt. I'm so sick of being manipulated, preached to, having them like, and I liked The Mandalorian. That was, you know, Jon Favreau, the guy that, you know, was the Tony Stark's chauffeur and kind of the director of a lot of the, you know, the Marvel stuff. You know, I thought, you know, he did a great job with that. When they did that, Disney could suck it. And up until this, all through the Trump reports that we've been doing, because Frank is such a pop culture guy, he knew that they were infiltrated. We could tell years ago where this was going. We're like, wow. It starts with the comics. They put it in. You know, Superman gets put in a kryptonite cell or something. Batman has to go save him. So the straight white male of Superman kind of gets raped in prison every day in the comics. They're doing, what? Robin's gay, Spider-Man's black. I mean, I'm going, holy crap, they're doing it. You know, Snow White, not so white, and the seven magical people or something. I mean, you know, Disney just might as well put a bullet in her mouth. So I was just like, this is, I'm not being part of this. I'm not supporting any of this crap. So this is... To get this kind of a movie out of a voluntarist, leave me alone as anarchist, Larkin Rose, is awesome to have something that you can, this. It's a tool.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that the, like I used to refer to the mainstream media all the time, I have to correct myself, they're not mainstream anymore. Like, CNN has puny audience compared to, like, half a dozen different random podcasters.
Skateboard Bulldogs like, get more hits than they do.
Yeah. So if we can, that's why our aim is not, we're going to win over what used to be the mainstream. Like, who cares? Our aim is to have it talked about on podcasts and stuff. Because, you know, if some, you know, Jimmy Dore totally came from the left and still is the left. I bet if he saw the movie, he would talk about it and say something about it. Russell Brand used to be left and now, you know, is condemned by everybody all over the place because both parties, he makes fun of both.
They're all going to decentralization, which is what we've been preaching forever. Down
right,
the local,
and then Joe Rogan has this monstrously huge audience. If he watched the movie, I bet he'd say something about it. And even if it's just, I'm not sure what to... So
it'll
the fact that we now have the opportunity to have a discussion... That's everywhere that doesn't rely on the Hollywood studios. Like, they have no say in it.
The Matrix is a system, Neo. That system is our enemy. When you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters. The very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and that makes them our enemy. You have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it. Were you listening to me, Neo? Or were you looking at the woman in the red dress? I was... Look again. Breathe it.
What are they?
Sentient programs. Anyone we haven't unplugged is potentially an agent. Inside the Matrix, they are everyone and they are no one. They are guarding all the doors, they are holding all the keys, which means that sooner or later, someone is going to have to fight them.
Someone.
I won't lie to you, Neo. Every single man or woman who has stood their ground, everyone who has fought an agent has died. But where they have failed, you will succeed.
Why?
Their strength and their speed are still based in a world that is built on rules. Because of that, they will never be as strong or as fast as you can be.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
We depend on our drinking water supply daily, but where does that water come from? Your water provider encourages you to get to know your local water source so together we can protect and preserve it. The investments we make as a community to protect our water source now ensure we have a sustainable drinking water supply for the future. Visit drinktap.org to learn more. This message is brought to you by the American Water Works Association and your local water provider.
anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.